So thank you everyone for coming on, just for the staying connected call on green finance, and then also just an understanding of the United States Green Building Council. Just a little bit of a layout of the call. So Wanda Spate from OFN will be talking about really just our green finance initiative. And then Beth Holtz and Nate Kredich from the USGBC will really be just giving an overview of USGBC, just the LEED certification, and also some other kind of interesting potential certifications for lending institutions. So without further ado, I will introduce you guys to Wanda. Can everyone see my screen, by the way?
Yep.
Okay. That sounds good. So Wanda will take over from here.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Seth. Good afternoon. Okay. Seth has indicated my name is Wanda Spate. I'm responsible for OFN's Financing Fund.
Thank you.
And I am delighted to be speaking to you today about OFN's Green Finance Initiative. Doing change?
Yeah.
Okay. Measures such as retrofitting older and existing buildings for increased energy savings, or investments in renewable energy sources, and the incorporation of green technologies into new construction provide the potential for enormous savings of both energy resources and consumer expense. Low-income and historically underserved communities offer especially fertile ground for the implementation of these and similar initiatives, as these neighborhoods are often more likely to contain older and less efficient buildings and have been excluded from energy retrofit projects. In fact, there was a recent study done that documented that low-income families spend approximately 20% of their annual income on energy and utility expenses, compared with only about a 4% expenditure for the average American household. Because low-income households have less disposable income due to their high percentage of household income spent on energy and utility costs, most cannot afford the cost of energy-efficient and water-saving improvements. As these improvements have the potential to so dramatically reduce the burden of utility costs, OFN feels very strongly that our industry should be supporting measures that reduce energy consumption. Energy and water efficiency retrofits in low-income housing make strong environmental, social, and economic sense. Reports and studies have highlighted the substantial opportunity in affordable housing, not just in utility savings to tenants and homeowners, but also through improved longevity and health of the building stock, a reduction of CO2 emissions, and the creation of quality green jobs. Some studies argue that the green sector could be the pathway out of poverty for disadvantaged workers. It could create increased health outcomes for low-income individuals. The impact of OFN's involvement in the green sector, more specifically energy retrofits, will significantly benefit low-income families and low-income individuals. The growing expertise of both OFN and the CDFI industry in this area will allow our members to enter new geographic areas and new sectors, and will allow CDFIs to approach borrowers and to provide financing and support to communities that they have not been able to support in the past. When we say green finance, it does refer to a pretty broad area of providing capital to projects that prioritize a positive environmental impact at some stage of the development process. Examples can vary from lending directly to an alternative energy generation project, such as a solar farm or wind farm. It can also be supporting a homeowner or community facilities owner, such as a charter school or healthcare facility, with the implementation of energy efficient refurbishment or renovations which will result in savings produced by an environmentally friendly retrofit. It also can include providing working capital, equipment financing, or long-term financing to the small business, which may be a contractor doing weatherization repairs or installing energy-efficient water heaters in low-income homes. Also included in this area is financing for businesses which produce green products, such as energy-efficient replacement windows or environmentally friendly cleaning supplies or clothing. Other areas that fall under green finance are transit-oriented developments, which are planned developments that include residential, commercial, and retail space, and they serve as a hub for public transportation. And some of our larger members, including TRF and Lyft, have financed transit-oriented development projects. For the near term, OFN will focus our efforts in green finance on energy-efficient retrofits. While we will continue to monitor development of alternative energy sources, as well as small businesses engaged in manufacturing green products, a successful energy efficiency retrofit program within the CDFI industry, which can document savings over a 2 to 4 year period, is very much aligned with OFN's strategic goals related to coverage and capacity building in the industry. It's also what we're hearing from our members as what's most needed in terms of their financing. In terms of OFN's approach, we're taking a two-pronged approach. There will be a lending component and a CDFI industry building component. The lending component has capitalization from a PRI from Bank of America. As some of the participants who are actually now on the call know firsthand, in November of 2011, B of A announced the selection of 9 CDFIs who received $55 billion in low-interest rate loans through its new energy efficiency finance program. The CDFIs were selected for their expertise in energy retrofit financing through a competitive submission process by a committee comprised of bank and industry leaders. Amongst those 9 CDFIs that received awards were Boston Community Capital, Community Investment Fund based in Chicago, Enterprise Cascadia, working in Seattle, Washington, and Portland, Oregon, Enterprise Community Partners, which is a nationwide organization doing some really creative and innovative energy efficiency benchmarking work with multifamily projects. There's Grow America Fund in New York, IFS based in Chicago, Low Income Investment Fund in San Francisco and LA, Self-Help in North Carolina, and the Reinvestment Fund operating in Baltimore and Philadelphia. Again, the funds that these groups are using and OFN's approach has been established to encourage energy efficiency improvement in older buildings. In addition to the OFN providing lending, there's also going to be some capacity building. The capacity building component will provide training for the CDFI industry on the technical aspects of energy efficiency. And we also will provide peer learning experiences so that CDFIs will have successful opportunities to progress in the energy efficiency area, and we'll give them an opportunity to learn from organizations that already have successful programs. And I might have flipped the slides here, but I did would like all the participants to make sure that they go on the website and look at three examples of CDFIs who are extremely active and have been very successful in the green finance area. Those include Craft 3, again, based in Portland and in Washington State. There's MACID and Pathways of Lending. All three have very robust websites that provides a lot of detail in terms of their energy efficiency existing programs. And our role at OFN is to give our membership the ability to engage in the field. We plan on doing this in a number of ways. As I mentioned before, we have a loan fund, a green finance fund, where we had an initial request for applications. We're happy to report that we had one application approved and are in the process of going through several other applications that have been submitted. We think that by the middle of the summer, we'll open up that window again for additional CDFIs to apply for financing under that program. But in addition to that, we also will be offering over the next year webinars, which will provide technical assistance to our members to get up to speed on the various components of energy efficiency lending and the energy efficiency sector. That will include information about energy audits and verification. And we also will provide peer learning opportunities, convenings for CDFIs to gain awareness of other programs, other active, successful programs in the industry. And we'll have gatherings at the OFN conference and possibly some at OFN regional meetings. I would encourage anyone on the call, if you have specific questions or if you have any suggestions for future webinars, please feel free to email either Seth or I. And on that note, I'll turn this back over to Seth.
Thank you very much, Wanda. If anyone has questions for Wanda, we'll probably wait to hear USGBC, and then you guys can ask Wanda questions at that time. So I'm just pulling up the presentation for USGBC. So Beth and Nate, are you guys on the line?
We are.
Yep.
Great. So Beth Holt is the VP for Strategic Alliances and Business Partners for the U.S. Green Building Council, and Nate Kredich is the VP of the Residential Markets. So they're really just going to give a nice overview of, again, the USGBC as well as just the LEED certification. So take it away, and then I'm controlling the presentation, Beth. So when you need to go to the next slide, just let me know.
Okay, this slide that's up there, did you switch the slide deck? Because this is slide 9.
Yep, hold on.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Great. First of all, thank you, Seth and Wanda, for inviting USGBC to engage with your membership. It's a very exciting time for us right now, and you know, what you are doing really strikes to the heart of our mission and our vision. The U.S. Green Building Council was founded in 93, and we're headquartered in D.C. Nate is in San Diego, and he runs all of our homes programs, so you'll be your residential programs, and you'll be hearing a great presentation from him that goes to the heart of what you were talking about, Wanda, in a minute. But we're a coalition of member companies, nonprofits, government agencies, and we have about over 13,500 members and over 180,000 professionals who have gone through one of our credentialing programs. So the organizations are from really breadth and depth of the industry, from real estate, government, nonprofits, schools, universities, and of course, you know, the usual suspects from the architecture, construction, and design industry. In 2000, USGBC launched our first rating system called LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. And it is four levels of awards, and it's for buildings, also for homes, so commercial buildings and homes. And the levels are certified silver, gold, and platinum. So the way we look at it is the impact on the environment at what level. So a LEED Gold building has 50% less negative impact on the environment. Elite Platinum building has at least 70% less negative impact than a conventional building. Next slide, please. Thank you. What is a green building? So this is a funny slide. I started perusing our website looking for a definition of what a green building is, and lo and behold, we don't have one. So kind of was thinking about this, and it really is just, it's a combination of technology and science combined with this innovation edge that create these buildings which are more energy, water, and resource efficient. And then they enable the owner and the participants, the people who work or live or play in the building, to work in a more environmental, socially responsible, healthy, and prosperous place. That's pretty much my definition. So these are the bold areas that we really focus on in the rating system, though. Next slide, please. As we look at the life cycle of a building, whether it's a home or a neighborhood, commercial and interior space, the walls in, new construction or existing building, we have schools, rating system, retail, and healthcare. We absolutely look at the whole cycle from design, construction, and operations. It's continuous improvement, so we always look for opportunities to innovate and adapt, and it's an integrated process. So we look for categories on process and performance that need to be spotlighted for the market to speed up the transformation for us. And then lastly, it's engagement. We look for more opportunities and channels for lead stakeholders to comment and inform on the rating system. And that's going on right now with LEED 2012. We are entering into our fourth public comment period, so you can get on our website and look at what's going on with the rating system. Next slide, please, Seth. So why would you build green? Why do people do it? Well, I kind of did a little bit of research and looked at a Deloitte study from 2008. And what they found out was they expected cost reduction to be the primary motive. Instead, it was the savings, exactly what you talked about, Wanda, from energy efficiency was one of the top drivers, cited by 75% of the respondents in the survey. And other benefits that are unrelated to real estate or facilities were also important. Corporate environmental commitment. It topped the list of motivation for a green retrofit. More than half of the respondents also identified greater indoor air and environmental quality, public relations and publicity, improved employee productivity, enhanced employee attraction and retention as important drivers. So from these results, it appeared to Deloitte that many businesses were taking on green retrofits as a way to achieve their market rather than cost structure. So I thought that was an interesting study to look at. Next slide, please. So you can tell that these buildings are energy hogs, and they also have a huge impact on our resources. So just looking at the slide, that you can see that buildings used 40% of the primary energy that we use in the U.S., and you can read 72% of electricity, 39% of CO2, and potable water consumption. These are commercial buildings. Next slide, please. So what does a green building do? Well, we reduce all of those things. We reduce energy usage, CO2 emissions, water, and solid waste. Next slide. That was from Turner. So you talked a little bit about supporting job creation. Booz Allen study cited by next year, green buildings will support nearly 8 million workers in a range of occupations, including construction managers, carpenters, electricians, architects, truck drivers, cost estimators, among many others. And I can tell you from my work on the credentialing program, We have over 55 different professions that are engaged with LEED right now. And they do, it's a very, very broad range, but we have salespeople, we have a lot of finance people, we have over 2,000 projects that are just with banks alone. And I did cross-reference, and I didn't see any on the commercial side with your members, but I'm sure we have engagement on the home side, and I think Nate can talk to that. Next slide, please. So McGraw-Hill put out a study that estimated that the green building market currently supports 661,000 jobs in the U.S. The figure is limited to workers who spend more than 50% of their time on green projects or designing and installing green systems. It excludes admin people and manufacturing, production, or transportation-related services, but they all have an impact when you think about it. The LEED rating system in particular takes a very serious look at transportation, at how materials are moved back and forth, and when they do deconstruction, where the materials are going, and so forth. So that's all accounted for in the rating system. Thank you. Next slide. Slide 9. It goes to LEED again, and this is just what our leadership in energy and environmental design. And so the next slide kind of explains it. LEED is consensus-based, so they evolve over time and will continue to evolve moving forward. And so the primary driver of LEED in USGBC is market transformation, and it's important for us to continue to respond to the market and push for that next level. The original LEED system was strategy-based, and it helped really pave the path. So, you know, this is where we're going. This is how we want to engage. The current 2009 system is analytical. And what that means is it's the LEED system is a series of points. And so they were weighted at that time in 2009 to motivate and reward work that hits sustainability bottom line the hardest. The new version coming out this November is called LEED 2012. It's outcome oriented. What we found in the market and what the market is pushing for, and this is going to really benefit the finance industry, I believe, is we want to support and reward actual performance. So we have a lot in 2012 that is measuring the performance of the buildings from the energy and the water usage in particular. Next slide, please. So like I said, there's four levels in LEED, certified, silver, gold, and platinum, and it really is up to the builder and to the owner to what level they're going to strive for. We're happy with any level. Of course, we want everybody to go to platinum because that has the least impact on the environment, but it's not necessary to become certified under platinum, of course. Next slide, please. So when you're registering a LEED project, and we're hoping that some of you do with maybe some of the places that you're retrofitting, you register your project through LEED online, you track everything is online, you track your progress, and you document all of your credits in our system online, and then you apply for certification. And this, and Nate can speak to the homes market, but for a commercial market, it ranges. You could have a building that is just being retrofit that could happen within a year or less time. And then you can have a neighborhood that's being developed that could take 10 years. So there's no really set timeline to how these buildings are built. Next slide, please. So on our website, usgbc.org, you can find all kinds of tools to use when you're thinking about building a LEED building or you're in the process of building a LEED building. Some of them are free, rating systems free. Some of them you pay for. You can purchase reference guides and workshops and so forth, which I think we can talk further moving on with our relationship about some of the places where we can assist you maybe with your training. We already gave you the 101 webinar series, which is free, or a course for all of your members to use to get a taste of what green building and LEED is. Next slide, please. So the council supports rich education and a research agenda, and we also have an advocacy program that is delivered locally through 79 chapters and actually now internationally. with our rural GBC partners. We have an international roundtable, and there's 21 countries that that sit on that, and they're helping us transform the market in a lot of different countries right now. Next slide, please. So you can see we, as of just February, we had 137,310 registered or certified projects. That's a pretty big number. You can get onto our website, and we actually have a daily little measuring tool that's on the front of our website that shows you how many square feet are being measured. And it's over 1 million square feet a day of projects that are going through certification. Next slide. And what that has added up to so far is 9.2 billion square feet as of February of projects in the commercial realm. That is not, that's not the residential. So now I'm gonna just give you a glimpse of two projects, and then I'm gonna hand it over to Nate. If you can go to the next slide, please, Steph. So this is the Bronx Library Center in New York, and it opened in 2006, and it replaced the Fordham Library, and it's five stories, 178,000 square feet. It's three times the size of the facility that it replaced. So, of course, they were looking for ways to lower their impact for having such a large space. And they did earn LEED Silver, and it was the first New York City municipal building to achieve LEED certification. So everybody wants to be the first at something with LEED. It's entertaining to listen to. One of the features they have in here is a glass curtain wall, which allows daylight into the library, and it's made of high-performance glass and insulated frames. They have an Energy Star roof, which reflects solar heat, and when the weather allows, the building uses outside air for cooling, which is wonderful. They selected materials based on the environmental characteristics, so they used a lot of recycled content, including foundation, structural steel, carpeting, terrazzo, and different flooring. 80% of the wood used in the library was certified to the Forest Stewardship Council standards. More than half the materials were manufacturing within 500 miles of the site, and the recycling plan diverted 90% of all their construction and demolition waste from the landfill. So that's pretty, I think that's pretty impressive. Next slide, please. So here is an office. It's the Boulder Associates Inc. office in Boulder, obviously. And what they did is they moved into a historic bank building. So when they moved, they wanted to create a healthy space that was a beautiful place to work, but showcase their innovative design. And what happened was they did all those things, and it generated client interest, and you know, they were just really excited with the opportunity to practice green and improve their employees' well-being. And that, you hear that a lot. People are, when they move into a LEED building or they're living in a LEED home, they want to talk about it, and they want to share their story, and they want to tell you how they're saving, you know, so much on energy, water, and everything else. So people are very proud of these buildings, and I think that was reflected in what Deloitte found out in their study. So I'm going to hand it over to Nate, who's going to really get into the details about what you're on the phone for, and talk about the residential side of things. Next slide, great. Please. And go ahead, Nate. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Beth, and good afternoon, everybody. I just a quick intro, as Beth said, I'm on the residential side for USGBC. Just a little history on us in the space. We have a few things that we drive residentially. One is the LEED for Homes rating system, which we, you know, obviously put a lot of time and resources in. The second is the resources we're putting into the existing housing market, which I'll talk to in a minute. And then the third, which is a connected yet we view separate pillar, is the work that we're doing in the affordable housing space. So if you look at USGBC, we're a mission-based organization. You know, residential obviously represents a huge part of the built environment. And we place a huge value on the social equity component for our mission, and who needs, you know, who needs healthy, affordable housing more than those that can least afford it. So that was what gave birth to Lead for Homes. Lead for Homes was in pilot from 2006 through until early 2008, when it came out of pilot and was a fully balloted rating system. And as Beth mentioned, we're about to update it really for the first time. We're going through that process now, and fourth public comment will be opening in a couple weeks, or I guess next week. So anyway, that gives you kind of a sense for, you know, what we've got going on. It's always been a major commitment area for us. In fact, if you look at our trajectory, even before we had Lead for Homes, we were doing work in the affordable housing space. It started in 2005. We held our very first affordable housing summit at Greenbuild being our expo convention that we hold every year. It's the largest in the world. We had a major benefactor at that time, and in the Home Depot Foundation. And you know, that's when we really started the dialogue with the affordable housing community around the importance of sustainability. And really that continues to this day. So we've got an immense amount of reach. This slide kind of shows you geographically what we're doing by project and professionals. This is actually not just Lead for Homes, but encompasses all of our rating systems and all of our credentials, which includes our AP as well as our Green Associate. But one of the neat things about this slide is it kind of shows you how universal green building and green building education and the credential and the professional side has really become. So next slide, please. So here's an example of a project, and I'm just going to leave this up to give you some more background on Lead for Homes. Lead for Homes is generally the rating system you would deal with in the affordable housing space. You can use Lead for Homes up to 6 stories. In some instances, we've gone higher, but for the most part, it applies fairly ubiquitously to residential structures, single family, multifamily, garden style apartments, mid-rise, townhomes, certainly both market rate and affordable, production home building as well. So in any event, this is a great example of an affordable housing project that we did very early on up in the Washington State area. And I'll talk to you a little bit more about this, but you know, the savings that you see here and then what we're delivering in terms of value to the residents is fairly standard, and we get very excited about the benefits that LEED drives to this market. Next slide, please. So just a little more color on this. We deliver LEED for Homes differently than our other LEED rating systems. So if you think about LEED, you know, commercially starting in 2000, you know, LEED was fairly well adopted by the AEC community, architects, engineering, construction community. When we launched LEED for Homes in 2008, we knew that was a long road. We didn't quite have the professional ecosystem built out like we did commercially. So what we chose to do is deliver it through a network of organizations and individuals with which we had direct relationships, but also folks that had direct dealings with the builders and the developers on a daily basis. And the reason that's so important is while LEED has very much become the sort of the standard commercially, residentially, there are some other rating systems. We feared there is confusion, and we wanted to make sure that the message was getting through easily. So our delivery model is really made up of 2 primary components: providers, folks we call providers, and green raters. Green raters are, I think, the most important piece to this. These are the hundreds of individuals that have been trained to deliver LEED for Homes and provide the necessary verification service that each project needs to certify. Every home, every unit is visually verified and inspected to ensure that the strategies that were intended to be pursued actually were achieved. And we do this through the Green Raider. So each Green Raider works on a project, and they work underneath an organization called a Lead for Homes provider. So what you see on this slide, we actually have 39 providers. We just added one. These folks, these are organizations, some of them quite large. They work across the country. And what they do is they provide the quality assurance at the rater and the project level so we can be certain that leads standards are actually being met out into the field. So it's a little bit different. You can think about the Green Raider somewhat as an AP in the commercial realm, who kind of spearheads the project team, but also provides a very important verification element that's required in the rating system. These numbers are a little bit outdated. I think we pulled them from a couple months ago. We should hit 20,000 certified homes next week, which we're excited about. And as far as the total registered homes, we're creeping up on around 80,000. So, yeah, these are sort of gross numbers. If you think about it, we've got 20,000 certified and about another 60,000 that are in the queue awaiting certification. If you look at it from a trend standpoint and go back a year, you know, a year ago, we only had about 11,000 certified homes and about 40,000 in the queue. So we've really seen a lot of growth, a tremendous amount of growth, and I'll share that with you in a minute, but much of it's been in the multifamily sector. Next slide, please. So this gives you a sense geographically of how LEED is catching on across the country. We actually are working, LEED for Homes is now working outside of the country. We just certified our first home in Saudi Arabia yesterday, so we're excited. Obviously, when you look at this map, we're strong in sort of those traditional places like California, Oregon, Washington, and New York. We're very strong in the Southeast, but yeah, people always laugh. I talk about how green Texas is. But you know, truth be told, Texas is probably the strongest Energy Star for homes market in the country. And LEED is really this perfect add-on that a lot of single family builders and multifamily developers have really attached to because they really need something to differentiate their product. So you can see, I think we're feel very good about the overall strength that we see around the country. I'd say geographically, Florida has probably been the most challenging market, but I don't think that's just for us. I think that's for everybody. It's been a tough time down there. A few more stats. We are heavily weighted toward multifamily. If you we generally look at units, and if you look at our units, about 85% of the units coming into the program now that are registering are multifamily, and about three quarters of the units that are certifying are multifamily. And just a quick sort of note on that, we ask projects to register with us before they certify. That way we have a pretty clear picture of their intention, and we can get a good sense of the pipeline coming through. Next slide, please. So this actually may be my last slide, which is unfortunate because I didn't create enough slides to keep up with my content. So apologize for that. But this is a pretty good backdrop to kind of cover the rest of the things that are important on the affordable side. And just as a quick update, as of this week, this number is actually 51%. So 51% of the certified units under LEED for Homes are affordable. And if you're wondering, we categorize affordable if the project is designed to serve a population at or below 80% AMI, or area median income. So for years, we actually really did a good job of tracking the level of affordability that we were touching. We don't do it as much as we did 18 months ago. We were doing it largely because we had a grant program that supported projects verification and certification fees. And so we awarded projects in part based upon their affordability. So up until about 18 months ago, we had very, very good data. The data is not quite as updated, but I think we're still trending on this. If you look at our certified affordable units, 70%, give or take, are at or below the 60% AMI figure, including a number of really, really deep affordable projects, really almost at the 30% AMI, which is, you know, public housing level. So we love that kind of information. We're awfully proud of this particular stat. And again, it has everything to do with the fact that we want to be delivering, you know, green homes to the folks that need them the most. One of the things I think would probably be interesting to this group is the number of tax credit projects that we do. We don't ask up front if it's a LIHTC project, but we've done surveys and we look at the projects coming through. We know the vast majority of our affordable housing projects are tax credit projects. We do a great deal amount of single family work with Habitat, which obviously falls a little bit differently, but you know, the multifamily work, I would say 90%+ of our multifamily projects that are affordable are tax credit projects. So, you know, obviously LEED plays varying roles in the different states' qualified allocation program processes, QAP. You know, our friends at Global Green, I think, do a great job. If you haven't seen it, their survey every year of the 50 state QAPs, and literally two-thirds of the states today are now referencing, you know, things like LEED and top building strategies and programs in their QAPs. And that's come a long way. I mean, I think if you go back 5 years, that number was probably closer to one-third. So, you know, one of the really important drivers for us on this has making sure that, you know, we've got the right partnerships in place and that we're all kind of, you know, rowing to the same beat. And this is a good time to talk about something that we've pulled together along with some of our partners, which is called the Green Affordable Housing Coalition. And I'd urge all of you, and I apologize I don't have slides on this, but if you go to greenaffordablehousingcoalition.org, you'll really get a good synopsis of what this program is all about. Basically, it's a national network that we, as well as others, that help to pull together folks like the National Housing Coalition and Enterprise Community Partners. And the whole idea is to foster collaboration and advocate for the development and preservation of green affordable housing. So a great deal of the work that we do is in this coalition is to make sure we're disseminating the right level of information. We're coordinating on really important policy proposals, advocacy efforts, outreach efforts, and making sure that, you know, we're speaking as an industry with a single voice. And that's something that in many ways had been missing for years. So if you kind of look on the site, you'll see, you know, some of the sample agenda items, things like the Green Act, the SAVE Act, 45L, existing legal authorities. You know, there's a report we put out that effectively allows us to reach out to federal departments and agencies promoting green building and sustainability in different sectors. So, you know, we hit on things like utility allowance calculations, you know, funding barriers with HUD-based programs, those kinds of things. So we have a very, very active and exciting group that's in this coalition. I looked briefly at the list of folks on this call. I think we got some folks from Enterprise, LISC, and NeighborWorks, and they're all really important partners. So I think there's opportunities for you to get involved there and just urge that you check us out at that particular website. So let me hit on two other things that I think are important. One of which is existing buildings. So if you think about LEED and LEED for Homes today, LEED for Homes is actually designed almost exclusively for new construction. So all the numbers and all the facts that we've been giving you has been on projects coming out of the ground. We do have a rating system for existing buildings. It's existing buildings, operations, and maintenance. When you look at that rating system and you try to map it onto a multifamily building, there are a number of requirements and credits that make it just very, very difficult. EBOM, as we call it, is much more geared toward an existing corporate building or office space, as opposed to a building that's designed for a living structure. So we are actively working on a potential alternate compliance path for a number of the more thorny credits within EBOM that we hope will make that rating system more applicable and more usable to folks in this particular space. We're probably 60 to 90 days away from being able to provide that level of guidance. But I did want to make that clear. Clearly, you know, retrofit activity is very much on everybody's mind right now. There are some really exciting developments going on in the financing side. We have a very good relationship, as I'm sure most of you do, with Fannie Mae. I think Drew is even on this call. I came from Fannie Mae. They're doing some really exciting things to promote green within the existing affordable housing sector, all the way to a hope to maybe one day develop a mortgage-backed security that would really incentivize folks to retrofit their properties. So we want to be part of that equation. A LEED is certainly a third-party, recognized third-party certification system that I think that the market would feel comfortable pointing to. We just recognize right now that it's not a terrific fit. And so we are actually, as I mentioned, actively looking at how we can adapt potentially our EBOM system for this market space. So I wanted to make that very, very clear because I think it further demonstrates our commitment to this sector and how important we know it is. So that's exciting. And the final thing I wanted to bring up is I mentioned at the front side of this call something that we do annually at Greenville, which is our Affordable Housing Summit. And the first, I don't know, five or six of these, we did this in partnership with the Home Depot Foundation. Last year, the Home Depot Foundation actually kind of changed their message, and they've moved away from affordable housing, green affordable housing, which was fine. But we decided that it was important to kind of keep that conference going. So we did it in Toronto, and it was a huge success. Now, along the way, we have a very, very good relationship with Enterprise Community Partners. You know, they're obviously the other big player in the green affordable housing space, an intermediary, strong on policy, you know, have a funding arm for tax credit deals. And for years, they have had their own green affordable housing conference, and it usually took place in the summer. And we've always worked very collaboratively. We helped them with theirs, and they helped us with ours. And yet last year we started talking, and we said, you know, is this market really big enough for two conferences? And so we started a very, you know, exciting and constructive dialogue about combining our conferences. And then some other folks have come along the way. And the MacArthur Foundation, Wells Fargo, and they have said, look, we would really love to support this sort of, you know, bigger, more consolidated conference and not be so redundant. So I'm excited to announce this year at Greenbelt in San Francisco in November will be our first combined Green Affordable Housing Communities Conference at Greenbelt. So if you're familiar with Greenbelt at all, or if you're not, Greenbelt runs Wednesday to Friday. And what we do is we will actually hold our affordable housing programming Tuesday and Wednesday. So if you come, it'll be a fantastic opportunity. We'll have very high quality programming, speakers, very topical, and financing being something that we will hit on sort of repeatedly throughout that program. And then you have the opportunity to enjoy the rest of Greenbelt. And again, it's the largest sustainability conference, I believe, in the world. There is, we have a massive trade show floor, world-class speakers, and San Francisco is not a bad place to go for it. So And the final plug I will put out there is as part of our the support that we've garnered from folks like Wells Fargo and MacArthur, the cost for this for attendees that are coming from either nonprofits or from government authorities is going to be kind of highly subsidized, and we're working on that. But just think about, you know, a two-day conference that you'd normally spend $1,000 on. We're thinking we can get this cost down and into the $200 to $300 range. So, you know, think about that. Think about that with the folks that you work with, and we would love to see you there. So with that, I think that's about all I had to kind of cover, and certainly I'm available to answer any questions that the group might have.
Hey, Nate, it's Seth. Thank you very much. Really quick, do you have the dates for that conference? When in November?
Yeah, it's November 13th to the 16th. And is the affordable housing the day before, Nate?
So if it's the 13th, 16th, I'm looking at my calendar right quick. Yeah, it'll start on the 13th, and it'll be 13th and 14th, and then Greenville kind of runs 14th to the 16th. So that week.
Great. Thank you. And thank you both very much for a great presentation. So with that, if anyone has any questions, please ask them.
Sorry, I have a question.
Oh, sorry.
I couldn't figure out how to unmute. Excuse me. This is Risa Osben-Escobar. I'm Assistant Director of Marketing at IFF. And one of the challenges that we're facing is just sort of our nonprofit market is really green is important, but there are so many other kind of fires burning hotter that it's just it seems like it's a priority, but it never seems to make it to the front of the list. And earlier in the presentation, about 20 minutes in, there was a slide called I think it was called Why Green, and I was sort of trying to Why Build Green, and I was sort of trying to quickly write down the things that you were saying, because I feel like if you know, we're saying when we're marketing our green lending products, you know, you can save money and also save the environment, but it seems like saving money is the biggest what we figured was the biggest reason. But you said a few others that I just wasn't able to write down quickly enough. So I think you said, like, employee recruiting, employee retention. I feel like it would just be helpful to hear those again, if you wouldn't mind just repeating those. I'm sorry to ask you to do that, just so that I can just take some better notes and take them back to my team. So it's really the reasons beyond saving money as to why a company would want to build green.
Right. I mean, the 75% of the respondents said the savings from energy efficiency was one of their top drivers. And that goes across the board. The other benefits were corporate environmental commitment, greater indoor air and environmental quality, public relations and publicity, improved employee productivity, and enhanced employee attraction and retention.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. That came from a Deloitte study that they did a very extensive survey.
And that was a Deloitte 2008 study, is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Do you know the name of the study or where I can find that so that I can,
if I wanted
to put that in the footnote, I would have the proper.
Sure.
Name.
I will send it to you. I think I have your email address.
Wonderful. Thank you. This is Risa from IFF.
Yep. I wrote it down.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Hey, this is Nate. Let me take a quick swing at this, because I only get asked this question about every day. And my answer it's like there's sort of five pieces to this. You know, operational cost savings is one, and one that everybody recognizes. Health benefits is very, very important. We can't overlook it. Concern for the environment typically ranks very low, but, you know, that's a driver for some people. But, the fourth one is value, the value of the building itself. And, you know, there are studies going on now, particularly, you know, on multifamily buildings more so than single family, that are indicating that, you know, that LEED buildings or Energy Star or some level of certification, you know, are more valuable when it comes to selling and renting. And I think that data is still being written, but it's important to kind of recognize it. And the fifth one, which I think is really important, is obsolescence. And what I mean by that is if you look at the International Energy Conservation Code, IECC, which basically gets ratcheted up every couple of years, these are the energy codes that we as a country are embracing. They are going up in sort of record breakneck speed. So the IECC for 2015 will be somewhere in the order of 50% more efficient than the code in 2009. So if you're building a building and you're thinking about having that building, you know, effectively not be obsoleted by technology in 5 to 10 years, you really need to understand that better. And so above code programs like LEED really encourage that you make that extra step so that, you know, you're not obsoleted in 3 to 5 years. You may be obsoleted in, you know, 10 to 15 years. But that's a really important thing to think about depending on, you know, your horizon of ownership of these buildings.
And Nate, I have another study. Geez, Risa, you opened up Pandora's box. So CoStar also put out a study. 2008 must have been a very busy year. They looked at 1,300 buildings. This is commercial space again. But some key facts, and these are facts, are rent premiums were $11.24 a square foot higher than conventional buildings. And they had a 3.8% higher occupancy rate. So I think those two facts, you know, really would help you to build your case.
Great, thank you. So I think we have a couple more minutes here. Does anyone else have any other questions?
This is Melissa Malkin-Waber from Self. All right, this is Melissa Malkin-Waber from Self Help Credit Union in North Carolina. I'm wondering if OFN is going to have a session on energy lending at the conference this year?
We are discussing that. It's definitely, we're not quite sure whether it'll be on energy lending or just a part of the general kind of housing lending track, but there definitely will be covered in some area. Was there anything specific that you wanted to see? For example, one of the things that I've been talking to a CDFI about that's currently engaged in providing home improvement loans is to provide, to think about doing a session on underwriting of loans for single family projects. So that's kind of one of the areas that I'm thinking about.
Sure. My personal interest is on commercial lending and to some extent multifamily, but single-family residential consumer lending is a whole different ballgame.
Yep.
And commercial lending has its own set of challenges. And I know that folks who have the Bank of America funding, including us, are working on a bunch of different ways to get the money out the door. Some of them commercial and some residential, and so I would love to have a chance to really sit down and dig in with folks who are doing the commercial.
That's definitely good feedback. It will be incorporated one way or another.
Thank you.
This is Andrea Martinez from the Grow America Fund. We have also received the Bank of America funding for small business lending energy efficiency. And I have a question related to the question I was just asked. I'm just curious about a lot of this presentation was focused on the affordable housing and the single family and multifamily residential. I'm wondering what some of the stats are for on the commercial side. And, you know, what might be some advice for reaching commercial, you know, owner users, building owners, in incentivizing them to take advantage of this kind of financing. It seems that it's been a little bit hard to reach these folks, and a lot of the small businesses that we deal with on a daily basis are actually leaseholders. They do not own their space, and for that reason, they're a little bit less inclined to make this kind of investment into space that they don't own. So I'm just curious if there's any feedback on that or any stats more related to the commercial side.
This is Beth. The whole presentation at the very beginning, everything was based on our commercial space. So that's where we have a lot of over, and well, homes were embedded in that one slide. But commercially, I think we have 45,000 registered and certified projects right now. And if you can email me or go through Seth a little bit more detail about what you're looking for, I can probably dig in and help you out. If you need data, if you need size, if you need a story to tell or something to present, or how to find the people.
This is Rick Menard at the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund. Just commenting on that, we use some ERA funds to work with, to provide energy efficiency lending to small businesses and nonprofits. And with some successes and some hard work, it was not always easy money to move, and we had ERA deadlines. The people who finally used it are all very happy with it. And I think as far as sort of encouraging others to use money, those kinds of success stories are going to be the answer. But it's a challenge. We'd be happy to talk to you about it offline anytime.
Great. Thank you.
Great. I can put you in touch. So we are just a few minutes past four, so I just want to be courteous to everyone's time. But if Beth and Nate are kind of available still to talk for a little bit longer, if anyone has any more questions, please ask them.
Well, this is less of a question and more of a comment on another intersection point between OFN and USGBC. This is Andrew Chan from Boston Community Capital. We are also one of the B of A recipients, but we also are a shareholder in a company called LegalWise. That's a utility tracking and benchmarking and data application piece of software, and we actually have a partnership with the USGBC on their Lead for Homes multifamily. So if you are involved with Lead for Homes, you can get PAC credit on their building performance partnership. That's one thing that I don't think was touched on in terms of what building performance partnership is. So you know, my point is that between OFN's work and what we're doing with USGBC, I think there's actually a pretty interesting set of data that we can be collecting and feeding into both organizations to really push the efficiency market forward.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's funny, we just had a call with all of our providers about an hour ago, and we brought up the WegoWise application again and really encouraging them to make use of it. We're within the rating system now. You know, you're getting credit for utility reporting, and WegoWise is a I think a pretty valid way to go about doing it. Multifamily, not so much single family, but multifamily.
All right, I appreciate everyone's time and thank Beth and Nate for giving us so much of their time and just insightful presentation. So if anyone has any questions that they think about after this call and would like to reach out to Beth or Nate, feel free to give me an email and I can pass that along to them and then they can get in touch with you. So my email address is sjulian, Julyan, @opportunityfinance.net. Thank you all very much. Have a good rest of your day.